Data Show with Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flata Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. Hi, kids. This is Kenty. And my low-calorie carbonated beverage is called Big K. And I'm in the Great Northwest. Today's show is a little different because my recording equipment is compromised. The laptop, the microphone I brought doesn't really work well with the laptop. It makes a funny noise, so I'm using my Olympus thingamajiggy. And today's show is going to be an interview with firefighter Cindy, and it's interspersed with some piano playing that she did. So isn't that great? Isn't that terrific? Not terrific. I'll also tell you, kids, is that it's like 11 o'clock. And I never record this late. I'm in bed by 9 p.m. But I was late doing this, so I'm not going to spend too much time here. So, Jose's shopping at Bloomingdale's, I'm in the Northwest, and now on with the show.
The mic.
Yeah, it's okay. Hello, Flata Show listeners, this is Kenty, as you always know. I always say that. And now we have firefighter Cindy. She has invited me to embed with Firehouse Engine 10, right?
7-6,
sorry. And we're just talking about how firefighters respond. So let me get back up here in the truck. My glass of water. And they have this neat little computer here, and there's maps of the entire city, and they can pinpoint down to actual commercial units. So like if they have to respond to an apartment building, they have a pretty detailed map of where the buildings are, where the pools are, all sorts of things. And I guess the pool would be interesting. You'd need that in case you need extra water. Would you
use
that? In
some cases, because we're an urban fire department, we have hydrants in most locations that we need them. So we generally have a really good municipal water supply.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get water out of a pool, you need what's called hard suction, like a straw.
Yeah.
And we don't carry that.
Okay.
So we would not be able to draft water out of a pool. More often than not, we use that information on emergency medical calls if they call and say we're at the pool. Then
okay.
We know where in the complex to go to find the pool.
Okay, I see.
So for large complexes, sometimes that's hard to find.
Okay. So that is very interesting. So what were we talking about before? We said something. Well, let's just continue talking.
Okay.
Tell me what you're doing when I have questions.
The computer tells me what kind of call we're responding to, and I get updates from our dispatcher. Because as we're responding, the dispatcher is still on the phone with the person who called.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're getting more information, such as if it was a medical call, any medical history that person might have. They might give them some first aid instructions. So I will get information from dispatch of what they're learning and what they're telling them en route, so we have a better idea of what's going on. Generally, dispatch tries to send a fire apparatus within, ten seconds of a call. So they ask some really specific rapid-fire questions at the beginning to find out, is it a fire call, EMS call, or a police call? That's their first part. And then they'll ask, if they say EMS or a medical call, are they breathing or not?
Mm-hmm.
Are they bleeding or not? Are they having a heart attack? And based on that very specific questions, they actually have cards to prompt them. They will triage it out and immediately get us as going as soon as possible. Problem is, we're going down the road with not a lot of information. So as they get more, they send it to us so we know what's going on.
Okay, so this is all happening from the time the emergency is called in. And then you're in here, and you're getting that information a bit at a time.
Bit at a time.
Because they're still talking to the person who called in.
Correct.
Asking these questions in order of importance. I guess it's been figured out which is what's important to ask, right?
Yeah, it's actually called the APCO system.
Okay.
Then they're a national standard card. And it's actually like a flip card. It's like a choose-your-own-adventure.
Yeah, like
Granimals. Remember those books?
Yeah.
Where
if you choose this,
go to this card. And then they go and ask those questions.
Yeah.
And it prompts them. So they don't have to think about it, of what questions to ask. It's already written down for them. And it's a pretty good system. I mean, it has its ups and downs. But for the most part, it does a pretty good job.
So how long has that been in effect?
They've been using those prompts for 20, 30 years.
Really?
But they've, you know, and I think now it's more commute.
It's computer. Like a flow chart.
It's a flow chart,
yeah.
So we can get that information. I can find out what other units are responding with us, other fire units or EMS units. And then I communicate to dispatch to tell them when we've arrived. I hit a button here. I can look at the map, which we were talking about. And if it's a place that has a what we call pre-fire plan, which is the site plan, I can bring that up, and that will help direct me in or tell me where the fire hydrants are or where the standpipe or sprinkler connections are.
Is that listed on here, where the fire hydrants are,
yeah,
the green
little symbol here.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So now how many feet away do you have to be from a fire hydrant? Well, you have to be right there, right?
No.
How far do you have
we carry 1,000 feet of 5-inch hose, which is the...
So I see the measurements there.
Yeah, here's the measurements.
Right, so 600 feet from
Arata.
I don't want to give the whole... We'll just say Arata.
It's 600 feet, and then
there's another 1,000 feet there.
So that's actually more a longer lay-in. If we had a fire at the farthest south of that complex, that's too far for our hose to reach the hydrant.
Right.
And you'll notice here there's a big and red drop 5-inch tail.
What that means
is that if we responded to a fire, say, at this unit in the, for the south, 102, we would come to this cross-section in the complex, and the firefighter in back would get out and would pull the end of the large 5-inch hose that hooks to the hydrant and wrap it around a post or something there, and we would leave it and continue driving, and it would lay the hose on the ground as we drove away.
Oh, nice.
And then we would get to the fire, and the next engine that would come in, we would tell them to lay in from the hydrant to our 5-inch tail. So they would,
wrap the hydrant, feet.
And then they would come to another 1,000 feet, or just less than, at our tail.
Yeah.
So what you would have is 1,000 feet from the hydrant, you'd have an engine, and you'd have water going in that engine, and then back out the hose again to the other engine.
So whoever's first. Right. Now, how do you know who's first? Do you just drive in, you don't see anybody, you know you're first?
Well, you listen to the radio when we get a fire call.
So they'll say who responded first, like, I got here first.
Well, you'll listen to the dispatch order.
Yeah.
So in this situation, they'd say calling box 7450, report of a residential fire at Wood Village Green, and they'd give the address. And then they would say for engine 7471-7572-31, truck 71, and C71, which is our command officer. And based on the order that they gave it, 71 was probably is closest.
Mm-hmm.
71 is second closest. 75 is third. 72 is fourth closest. That's if they're in quarters.
Okay.
If you're out on the air and you get a call, what we say as an officer, I would say engine 7, if I was on that box, engine 76, copy, we're responding from, and I would give my location, and that tells the other fire apparatus that I'm not in coming from quarters. I'm from a different location, and that they can gauge, oh, they're further away or they're closer. And then if you are coming in, the first person who arrives gives a size up. They say, engine 76 arriving, standby for size up. That tells everybody, oh, they're there first.
Got it.
So we would drive in, maybe I would see smoke, and I would tell them, engine 76 arriving in the complex, we see smoke, standby for size up, we're laying a 5-inch tail at the east-west cross. So we would drop the tail, and then I come up here, and then I would tell people what I would say. It's very systematic. I'd say, engine 76 arrived, We have a single-story manufactured home, double-wide. We have smoke showing from two windows on the alpha side, which is the front side.
Okay.
People standing outside say everybody's out. Engine 7-6 has command establishing the water supply.
Now, how much can you trust people when you ask them if everybody's out?
Well, most of the time they will tell you that you have to find the right people.
Yeah.
You know, are the owners here or occupants here?
Like, let's say it's an apartment building.
Yeah, in that case.
Like a family, we're all out because, it's my kid,
Who lives in that unit? And they would say, oh, yeah, I do. And you say, is everybody out? Is everybody accounted for? And they would say yes or no. Sometimes what happens is if it's an apartment unit and it's the middle of the day, all the neighbors go out and you say, is everybody out? Well, they don't know. They might not even know their neighbors. So that we have to take into consideration other clues. Is their car in the parking spot? Is their door open or closed? Has anyone seen them today? That kind of stuff. What time of day is it? At noon, in the middle of the day.
Jack always works.
Yeah,
right,
on a weekday, they could possibly be at work. 3 o'clock in the morning, they're probably home.
Yeah, right.
So those are kind of the clues that we use. But most often, we get pretty good information. You wouldn't usually get somebody that would say, oh, yeah, they're all out when they haven't, unless there's some type of malicious activity.
But that's not generally
not the case.
Okay, good. That's good to hear.
So that's how you would know if you're not the first person in. You would hear, oh, they're arriving. They're going to give a size up. They're first in.
Mm-hmm.
So then if you're not first in, we kind of stay out of the way and wait to find out what they have and what they want you to do. So after I give my size up, I tell my crew what I want. And then I make orders to the other apparatus that are arriving. Engine 7-1, lay in from the hydrant west of the complex. And they would say, copy, engine 7-1, laying in from the hydrant west of the complex. And then I would truck 7-1, come up the east driveway, position southeast of the unit. You're going to do primary search.
Mm-hmm.
Copy, then they would repeat back. So very systematic, very succinct orders. You say your order, they repeat it back just to make sure that they've understood. And it's very controlled that way. What does not happen, what you don't want to happen, is everybody's glom in and
of course
crush in.
Yeah, because you want order.
We want order.
You need order. Because as you were saying before, is that when you set up the truck, and I see here, you have your boots here, it's like setting up an easel. You know where the yellow paint is, you know where the green paint is, and then you can go ahead and do your job, because you don't have to think about where these things are.
Yeah, and once you put certain things in place, you can't move things. So once we put that 5-inch hose, it's a 5-inch diameter hose full of water, you can't pick it up. You can't drive over it, so it's going to block your access.
Mm-hmm.
Once you set the truck up with the big ladder on it, it's not moving anywhere. And once you get fire engines into places, it's very difficult if we needed to move one around. If they're all plugged up in the complex, you can have problems. So we try to keep them out of the area and people will walk in with their equipment.
Makes sense. So, okay, I have a quick question as I was looking down here. What is this thing down here?
This is
a
lock
letters.
Box.
Okay, it looks like a lock and it has the alphabet.
Combination.
And it looks like a super secret, like, spy thing.
Yeah. What it is it is some keys that, actually there's two sets of keys. It has our key to our controlled substance box.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like if you need morphine or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it also is a key that businesses put their keys in that we can access.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I understand.
So
like the master key. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. That's
so
interesting.
It's a very super secret.
Okay, well, I didn't see anything. I don't even know what I talked about.
But yeah, we do.
And now I have to take the cyanide pill, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
I have to kill you.
See, firefighters are dangerous.
Yeah.
But they'll respond really quickly if you need them.
We'll kill you and no one will resuscitate you.
Yeah. is the second segment, and Firefighter Cindy is going to show us the equipment of this brand new District 10 fire truck.
Yeah. This fire station is actually owned by Fire District 10, but they don't have firefighters. They are a tax entity. Fire District 10 used to have a fire department. They used to have personnel, but they have been annexed by different areas. So District 10 is a fire district that they take tax money from people that live in this area.
Mm-hmm.
But to provide fire service, they contract with the city of Gresham, which is us. So we respond out of their station with their apparatus. So that's why this engine says Gresham Fire and Fire District 10. So we actually combined.
Is this Gresham?
This is Multnomah County.
But it's not really part of Gresham.
It's not the city of Gresham.
It's like school. It's like, okay, it's like, for example, right, if you have a town that's really small, can't really afford to have its own school district, it will use the school district of the town next to it,
exactly.
And they'll pay taxes to
say, exactly.
So this is sort of, I see.
So it's a partnership.
It's a partnership, and that's America.
It's Civics 101. So back here is where the firefighter sits.
And there's four across.
There's four across. Yeah, we could actually carry six people, but we only respond with three. That's mm-hmm. our minimum staffing. So I have a driver, who we call the engineer, myself, who's the officer, and the firefighter in back.
Let me ask you a question. Has there been a time in your career as a firefighter where there's been more than three?
Yes, we have several fire stations that are staffed with four on a rig, but our minimum staffing is three. So if we have people on vacation or sick leave or injury leave, that fourth person gets what we call detailed to cover a vacancy. So
it's like a floater.
They are floaters. It's exactly what we call them. We mm-hmm. have a detail lieutenant, which is an extra officer, mm-hmm. and then we have firefighter floaters, mm-hmm. and they're substitutes, like a substitute teacher. So we will pull those people out of those rigs that have four people assigned down to their minimum staffing of three.
Okay.
And then if we get below that, then we bring people in on overtime.
Okay. Now, you're a captain,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yes.
And what are the other two gentlemen? What are they?
They're firefighter rank.
Firefighter rank. Okay.
Yeah.
So what are the different ranks for firefighters?
We have firefighter, which is the person who in back or drives. But the person who is the firefighter that's driving, we call the engineer. But
okay.
It's not a rank.
Okay.
In this department.
It's just
it designates their role.
Yeah.
Other departments, engineer is a rank, but not here. We expect everybody to go through that engineer role.
Yeah.
Then the next rank is lieutenant, and they are the company officer in charge of their crew mm-hmm. of two or three. And then above that rank is captain, and they are also a company officer that is in charge of their crew of two or three. But the captain is in charge of the fire station operations, the budget, and in charge of the two lieutenants on the other shifts.
Okay.
So we have three shifts at this station. So there's a captain, which is me, mm-hmm. with two firefighters. And then on the other two shifts, there's a lieutenant and two firefighters.
So you have eight people under you.
I have eight under me. At this station.
Yeah.
If I was at another station, I could have up to 24.
Yeah, but I mean, right, but here.
But here.
I see how
yeah.
it is. So you're responsible for all the shifts
mm-hmm.
and for the budget and everything.
Yeah.
Now, do you have to... I should have this one. I should do this for me because I'm used to having a... can you hear me? I'm used... Okay. Do you have to present a budget to City Hall or...
I present a budget to my supervisor and the fire chief.
Okay.
So
and then they consolidate it?
They look at all the fire station's budgets, make some reappropriations and so forth, and then present it as a package to the city council and city manager. So every year I have to go through and look at the condition of the station and our equipment and budget out what I think, forecast what we might need, and then make that presentation and get money. So like this last year was kind of a mess because we needed a whole new fire station, basically, because we had a mold problem.
Mold, that's right.
Yeah.
I heard about the mold.
The mold.
Wasn't there a fire station that burned down?
That too? Happens occasionally, but we haven't had that here. Knock on wood.
So where was the old station?
This is the old station that you're in now.
And it was clear of mold?
It is clear of mold now. you can use melody mold. And then while we were, while the station was condemned, we evacuated the station and responded into the single wide mobile home that's in the parking lot.
The one that I had.
The one that you knocked on the door and found that was empty. So that actually has been here for just over a year. We've been back in the fire station since right after Christmas. And next week, that trailer is being moved out of here, and we'll get our parking lot back. We're actually keeping that at our training center in case we have a situation at another fire station that we need an emergency fire station.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Let's see, the rest of the equipment. So we talked about the ranks. Oh,
okay, now the seats here, are they for a particular, like the reporter goes all the way down there, right?
The what?
The reporter.
The podcaster
goes all the way down there.
There's a seat for the podcaster.
Okay.
We call that a jump seat.
Okay.
It flips down. And then the two seats in the center, they have the SCBA bottle built into the back, like a backpack. It has a bracket.
I see.
In the back of the seat.
And it has air and everything?
That has the air bottle.
Okay.
So if we had a fire right now, Clayton, who's the firefighter, would put his pants and coat on, and instead of sitting in the jump seat, he would sit on the SCBA seat. And he would put those straps on, and he would put the bottle on as we're going down the road and have a seatbelt on, which is the most important thing.
I see.
Don't go without seatbelts. Not even...
Well, you can, right? I mean, you're not supposed to legally, but I guess if you're going so fast, it really is important.
Well, traditionally, culturally, firefighters didn't put their seatbelt on in the fire engine because they felt that it hampered their ability to put their gear on. Well, we have... Fire engines aren't any different than anyone else's car. And we're driving with some adrenaline, and you confuse people with the lights and sirens, and they get in accidents. And across the country, we have killed hundreds of firefighters from vehicle accidents.
Countrywide, you're saying?
Across the country.
Okay.
For being in accidents without having their seatbelt on. And we respond to people who've been in car accidents without their seatbelt on, and we talk about how horrible it is. They should have had their seatbelt on. So there's a big initiative across the country been for the last 5 years of putting your seatbelt on. And it's been very difficult to change that culture.
We're going to change it on the Flatus Show.
Everybody
going to support
your seatbelt.
That's right. Firefighter Cindy says,
wear your seatbelt.
That's correct.
We don't move the engine until everyone in the engine has their seatbelt on.
Okay.
And it is everybody's responsibility. The driver doesn't go until everyone has their seatbelt on. Notice our seatbelts are red.
Yeah.
They used to be black. Well, they're red now,
sense.
So you can look back and see that there's the red seatbelt going across their body. I am responsible to making sure that the engineer doesn't go without.
How do you know about
the
other two?
Turn around and look.
No, I mean, not you, but like when you're not here. How can you tell it's being enforced?
That's my job as a leader and a supervisor and a manager to make sure that they understand that we're changing the culture, and the expectation is that you do wear your seatbelt.
Okay.
And
I mean,
goes
and that's pretty good, right? I mean, people are pretty good at that?
Yeah, they are. Well, there's also disciplinary measures if they don't.
Can you tell, is there like a little computer saying that, you know, if the thing has been clicked or not?
Not on this rig, but you can get a rig that has that. But people bypass those.
Of course, anything
they make cars that have the alarm that says if there's weight in the seat, that the seatbelt doesn't click, the alarm goes off.
Yeah.
Well, what they found with firefighters, because firefighters will find a way around anything, is that they'll go ahead and have the seatbelt always clicked and just sit against it.
Interesting.
So the biggest thing is changing the culture and making sure that we don't do that. We don't get dressed. We don't stand up and put our turnouts on in the rig. If we're out going to the grocery store and we're driving down the road, and we get a call for a fire, we pull over to the right, we stop. Everybody gets out and puts their gear on, gets back in the rig and puts their seatbelt on.
You can be out?
We have 24 hours a day,
uh-huh.
7 days a week, we have to be able to respond. So when our shift starts at 7 o'clock in the morning, we are ready to respond, and we have things we have to do. We have to go shopping, go to the grocery store for food.
Mm-hmm.
We might have to go to a class or a meeting. We may have to shop for supplies for the station. So when we go out, we are available on the radio, and we could get called out, and they would send us on a call.
Okay, you go in your car, right? Let's see. Let me give you an example. You never go out in your car. You always
take, in the fire engine. All.
If you go shopping, you take them.
Yes. Yep. So
here comes the fire engine again.
Absolutely.
Through the McDonald's drive-thru.
You know, that's been a big public relations thing, as long as I've worked here and at all different fire stations, is you'll have someone come up to you in the grocery store and say, why do you have the fire engine at the grocery store?
Because
we always are available to respond to whatever emergency might happen at any time. So we don't ever leave each other. The three of us are together at all times. And if we're not physically together, we are by radio and within ability to get back to the engine promptly to respond. And we have all of our gear with us.
Okay, so firefighters are like Borgs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You have to be together.
You have to be together.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
You're Borgs.
Yep, we're big-time buddy policy. In fact,
it makes sense.
It goes into firefighting. You never leave your buddy. You never go in a fire by yourself. We eat together. We train together. We spend time in the evening in the day room watching television together. It's a big thing, big camaraderie and big safety thing.
Okay. What is the biggest thing that annoys you in fire movies, movies about fires like Backdraft or The Towering Inferno or, like, you know, what is it that you, like, watch this movie like, that would never happen?
Not wearing your SCBA, standing up with no smoke in a fully involved building.
Okay.
That drives me crazy.
Because you know they're not going to survive,
no,
right?
Backdraft in Ladder 49, there's never any smoke, and they don't have to wear their mask. It's not like that at all.
It must be pretty scary if you're in a building.
Yeah,
have you been in a burning building?
Yes. Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah,
we'll sit down. Okay, so now this is the pump, or?
This is the other side of the pump. Where water comes in and out.
Okay.
We've got large hoses and small.
So you hook up the hydrant to one of these or the other side? To this one, yeah.
Mostly there's one on the end. This one actually is not optimal.
Mm-hmm.
This is if we wanted a second line in from a hydrant.
Got it.
And this is to have large discharge. So if you wanted a big hose with lots of water coming out. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, let me ask you the question. Mm-hmm. How much water does it take to put out a fire? Like, let's say a medium-sized house where, you know, flames are coming through the roof. Where we get to that point where you're not going to survive. I mean, the house isn't going to survive.
Well, your math changes if it's out of the box, as we call it.
Meaning it's not going
to... It takes more water. It's hard to do the math. When we do our calculations to determine how much water needs to be, we look at the compartment space. It's length times width divided by 3, and that kind of gives us our rule of thumb.
Really? Have you, like, size it up? You have
a good visual sense
of, like, you see a house, that's a 3,000-square-foot house.
Yeah.
Two floors, I know where the ceiling of the fire is.
Yes. Most of the time, for a residential fire, well, it's practice.
Yeah.
We get houses that are donated that are going to be demolished, and we set them on fire and put the fire out, and we do that several times to start learning our technique. How much water will it take? How many hose lines will it take? How many people?
Nice.
For a house fire, I will generally take 3 of these 1¾-inch lines. See, there's 2 here and 1 off the back.
Yep.
That will put out a house fire.
Okay.
In most situations. Now, and that's what we call our bread and butter fire. That's what we respond to most of the time. And apartment fires.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get into commercial fires, you know, warehouses.
That's different.
That's different. It takes a
bigger hose. Like a lumber yard or something and be like, forget it, right?
Yeah.
So let's say a house, like, how many house fires are there a year in this county? Or your area that you respond to?
I should know that, but I don't.
Like rough. Under 50?
We probably have 50.
Okay, you have 50.
Yeah.
And of those 50, I'm a bad podcaster. How many of those just totally destroy the house?
Probably 10%.
10%. So
most of them are room and content fires.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Cooking fires.
And people can, after that's taken out, they can probably live in the house?
Yeah. After it's remodeled, all the stuff's taken out.
It's like one room could be destroyed, but the rest of the house is livable, right?
Or smoke damage.
Or smoke damage, but that's not going to kill you.
Oh,
I mean, it's not going to kill you after it's done. I'm talking about the damage. It's not a structural problem.
These compartments have our medical equipment. And
I see the different colors here.
Yeah, there are different colors.
Is that color-coded?
It's just so you can quickly tell the different box apart.
Like this pediatric. So if you have children, you're going to pull that one out.
Yes.
This is airway. You know somebody's not breathing.
Yes.
So what's the blue one?
The blue one, the top one has cervical collars.
Oh, yeah, that's
like
the one John had. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the one underneath it is our multiple patient or mass casualty incident bag.
Okay.
So if we have between 3 to infinity number of patients, there's things in there for triaging multiple patients.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have between 3 and 9 for patients, we call that a multiple patient scene, and we have a set of protocols and procedures to do the most for the best for the most amount of people.
Okay, makes sense.
We structure out our incident command system a certain way. We call the specific number of equipment based on that. If we have 10 or more, that's our mass casualty, and we have a separate protocol and a different procedure for handling that.
Mm-hmm.
So that contains triage tags and worksheets and things that we need to respond to adequately to that.
Okay. So they're all color-coded.
Yeah.
So ready to go.
We have our life pack,
okay,
which is our heart monitor that can defibrillate.
Okay.
It also can do a 12-lead EKG, like you would go to your cardiologist to look at your heart, the big 12-lead.
So you can tell if they've had a heart attack, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
So that's some new technology that we've gotten.
So people of Gresham, you can be told if you had a heart attack, mm-hmm, if the firefighters come.
Yes. We will look to see if they've had a heart attack, and based on their 12-lead EKG, we will take them to a correct hospital.
Okay.
Because not every hospital has what we call a cath lab.
Yeah. So, oh, that's right, to do the heart stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
So if we know that they've had a heart attack, we won't take them to a hospital that won't have a cath lab.
Yeah.
And we can call that cath lab ahead of time and say, we're going to be there in 10 minutes or 15 minutes. We have a confirmed heart attack.
Okay.
And when we get there, they get wheeled directly into the cath lab, and it actually saves lives.
This is my question now.
It saves their muscle.
Because you're saying something to me. You take them to the hospital? Or
the ambulance does, but...
Is there a way for you to take them to the hospital?
We will go, if we have a confirmed heart attack or a major medical call, paramedics from the fire engine will jump onto the ambulance and go with. Because an ambulance comes with two people, someone to drive, and someone who's in
the
back.
So you would go with the ambulance.
Correct. And then the fire engine would follow.
I see. But it wouldn't take. There's no place to take
no,
to carry somebody.
We don't transport.
Okay.
No.
I suppose all 12 ambulances. Well, we'll talk about this, right?
Yeah.
There's how many engines? How many fire engines? There's like there's less ambulances than there are fire engines, correct? So let's say all 12 ambulances have gone to an emergency at the other side of town. And it's like a big fire. Something happened. You know, mm-hmm, a bomb went off.
We had a multiple casualty.
right? And you're all over here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a call that Miss Smith had a heart attack right, mm-hmm, down the street. What do you do?
In that situation, if all the ambulances in Multnomah County were used, they would move ambulances from Clackamas County, Washington County, or Clark County, all the surrounding ones, in to fill those vacancies.
Oh, so they do that automatically?
They do that automatically.
Oh, okay.
Same thing as if...
So there's always going to be an ambulance, even if the...
Hopefully.
Even if the Gresham County ones are all used.
Yes, they'll move from another county some more ambulances. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Same thing that happens if we're right on the border with Clackamas County, and let's say that Clackamas County had a huge fire right now. They would call our dispatch center and move our engine to cover a Clackamas County Fire Station.
Okay.
And we would adjust where our fire apparatus are. We would have some stations that didn't have a fire engine. So it'd be like every other fire station would have a...
You'd spread out more. So it's like, it makes sense. It's like, mm-hmm, in the human body, right?
Mm-hmm.
If something happens, a contusion, the blood will rush there, or things will start shutting off, and things will readjust.
Right.
Right? So it's like a living organism.
It is.
See, it's the Borg.
Firefighters
are the Borg.
So we have all of our specialized equipment.
Wow. Now let me ask you this. This is a fairly rural kind of town, right? I mean, it's
not a town. This is a rural area.
Rural area, but I mean, even the city. I mean, it's, mm-hmm, a city, but it's not like New York City with skyscrapers.
It's not urban. It's suburban.
It's not urban. Yeah. So now, if you were a firefighter in New York City, what do you think you'd have to have extra training, or would they train you differently?
It would be different. The equipment's different. They train also for high-rise fires. We don't have high-rises.
Mm-hmm.
They actually work different shifts. They work like a 10-hour shift, and then they're off, and then they work a 14-hour shift, and they're off because their call volume is very high.
Okay.
New York Fire does not do EMS. They have an ambulance. New York EMS does their EMS, so I wouldn't be a paramedic on the fire engine.
Was it Big C? He was a paramedic, right?
Big C is a paramedic, yeah.
So now he's not part. Is he part of the fire?
No, he's with the ambulance, but he does respond with fire.
Yeah. Because that's what I thought.
Yeah. So things are different, and every community's fire department needs to look at their community and tailor themselves to what the community needs.
Mm-hmm. So suppose Gresham decided to build a 40-story high-rise. Would the fire department say, hey, think about this, because we need training. If you're going to do that, you're going to have to pay an extra $40,000 a year to take care of that building.
And we need different equipment. We only have one truck. If you have a high-rise, you're going to need more than one truck. Yeah. So they have actually talked about putting 6-7-story buildings in town. We have one right now, which is the hospital.
In Gresham.
Yeah. But they've talked about putting more. And
what about Portland? Is there anything?
Portland has high-rises downtown.
Okay.
So they have more trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And they have high-rise protocols. So, it's tailored to their community. Out here, this is the rural part of town. Usually I have a brush unit for wildfires.
In
fact, that's what this space is for. When our trailer is moved out of the parking lot, we'll get our brush unit back.
Oh.
The next station over is next to the Sandy River, so they have a boat. They have a small boat that they put on a trailer that's towed by a pickup, and if they get called out, they will take that down to the Sandy River and launch it. We have one of our stations has a hazmat rig, hazardous materials.
So they have like a specialized thing. In case there's a brush fire, right?
Right.
They're going to call this one first because they have the equipment.
Exactly.
Because it would be not cost effective to have all of this equipment in every single unit. That makes sense.
So we tailor our deployment model based on our community.
Nice. This is the final door.
I'll take door three.
Oh, my God, fire axes.
Fire axes and hose bundles and extinguishers. We actually carry extinguishers.
I saw your collection of extinguishers.
Did you know my old ones? My obsolete ones?
They're neat.
Yeah.
Do you collect them? I mean, those are like antique ones and stuff? Neat.
And then on the back, this is called the hose bed.
Oh, this is the hoses?
This is where some of the hose is.
Oh, my God. My God, look at it.
So that's
1,000 feet.
That's 1,000 feet of 5-inch hose.
Uh-huh.
And it's flat loaded in, and then when we have to take a hydrant, you pull the tail out of it, wrap it around the hydrant, and that person stays there with their foot on the end and tells them, lay in! And the engine drives off and it feeds out.
Cool. Now, how long does it take to put that back in there?
Not very long. We take the three of us. Sounds like somebody walked in.
Oh. Hello?
Hi, Gary.
We'll pause. Thank you. the hose here. Now you have five-inch hose.
This is a five-inch, and that's basically an above-ground water main.
Got it.
It's a temporary water main. And you don't pick that up. It's on the ground. It, you know, with 5 inches of water, it's like a gallon every foot, so uh-huh. 8 pounds per foot.
Okay.
This is 2.5-inch hose. It's a larger diameter hand line, and it takes more people to control. It flows 300 gallons a minute.
Wow. And this is used for houses? Is that the one used for houses?
We use that for commercial fires.
Okay.
Because they're very difficult to maneuver. Again, they're about bigger diameter.
Yeah.
Higher flows. They're less manageable.
Okay.
They're less maneuverable. So, and it takes three people at least on one of those hose lines to maneuver it.
And that's the third hose.
And the third hose is 1¾ inches, just like we had on the side. There was the blue and the red hose.
Yeah.
This is just a longer one of those.
All 1,000 feet?
No. The first one is 150 feet.
Uh-huh.
The second one is 200 feet. This is 250 feet.
Okay.
So they just increased by 50 feet. But it's what we use most often for house fires. It's more manageable.
I see.
One or two people can handle it.
It's all dirty.
This hose is dirty, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been in a fire. We wash the hose and we hang it to dry, but it gets stained.
Yeah.
And this one actually has been exposed to the weather here, so that's why that's dirty.
How long do you have to replace a hose?
I can't remember what the service life. We have somebody whose project is to manage the hose, and we also have it tested every year.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets tested under higher pressures, and if it bursts, then it's taken out of service.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah.
You know, we lose a lot of hose by testing it, but you know,
you have to do it. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But that's what we use. That's our bread and butter hose. Same for car fires. We use it for that. It's very manageable.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is just another. This is a pre-connected 2.5. It's 250 feet. This one isn't connected. There's 1,000 feet of it loaded in here, and you pull off the what we call the shoulder load and throw it on your shoulder, and then you start dragging out chunks of this.
Yeah.
And then we call that a long stretch. And when we stretched out enough, say we needed 600 feet of it, then the engineer comes and breaks the connection there and then hooks it to the engine.
Oh, okay.
So this one's pre-connected. This is pre-connected. These aren't.
These aren't. Okay.
So that's the difference.
This goes down here like this?
Yep. This is the hose bed cover. Oops. It goes on the hook. Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's. Oh, I see the hook right there.
That keeps the hose from coming out.
What's
when you're driving down the road.
For?
They had a metal hose bed cover at one time, but it wasn't.
Does anybody stand on here to travel?
No. Nope, that's called the tailboard.
This is for parades, right?
No. Never.
Never?
Everyone has to have a seatbelt.
Oh, that's right. Even on parades?
Even on parades.
Oh, my God.
They actually have killed people from falling off at low speeds off the tailboard and hitting their head.
Makes sense.
And it used to be you were a tailboarder.
Yeah.
You stood on the
tail. And the dog would become following,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the dog would follow. And you had a tailboard strap that went around your waist, and you were strapped into the rig.
Got it.
Not safe. We don't do that anymore. But, you know, they did that 20 years ago.
I know. I
very
see.
Long.
Yeah. You see it normally. I think they still do it in Cambridge.
It's not safe.
Okay. Firefighter Cindy says not safe.
Okay. This is an appliance compartment. So these are all kinds of connections and couplings and nozzles for
jet
different
foam. Things. Is that for like chemical things?
That's for making foam. We have concentrate that's like
for gas
dishwasher soap.
Uh huh.
It makes
like,
bubbles.
Is that for like for burning car or whatever?
Yep, for burning car or for alcohols or hydrocarbons, any kind of fuels. This also is for making foam. And just different types of nozzles. Remember how that hose, I said, you pulled out as much as you wanted and you took off the end? Well, so we carry other nozzles so we can make more of those hoses.
Look at that. Neat.
Yeah.
I wish I had my camera. It's just one or the other. I'm never prepared. I'm an unprepared podcaster.
And in here, we have rope bags. We've got stabilizing chalk blocks, so if there was a vehicle that was upside down on its side, we can stabilize it so it's safe to move around.
Oh, so it's not moving around.
Yeah, it won't fall over.
Pull the person
on us.
Out or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you have jaws of life?
Not on this. Oh. We carry those on our truck and our heavy rescue.
Okay.
Again, specialized, it doesn't make sense for everybody to carry. They're very bulky and they take a lot of special equipment.
Okay.
So,
But you don't have it here. But someone does. Someone does.
Yeah, our truck and our heavy rescue.
Yeah. So, like that, the truck who has that jaws of life, they're the ones that respond to car accidents.
Well, we all do. We will call them.
Like the first, because they need jaws of life, right? So as they say, the person's caught in there. They're calling.
Yeah, we send the closest engine, and we also bring the truck.
Yeah.
So you want the engine will get there first, and then we'll size up and say, oh, yeah, this person is pinned in, and then we'll tell the truck where to respond to and where to set up so that we can get them out.
Okay.
Yep. And these are backpacks full of real thin 1-inch and 1.5-inch hose for wildland fires.
Oh, wow.
So
I thought it was Annie. You know, Annie, can you hear me? Just in case, you know, you need to practice.
Know. Exactly.
Right?
But most of the wildland fires, they're kind of remote. They're in bushes and stuff. So you put that on a backpack, you pull a hose, and then you take this spaghetti-like hose on your back. And
spray the ground?
Yeah. Easier to carry. And we use all of our space. There's some little cubbies that carry spare air bottles.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a question, because you're kind of short, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't there one time a size requirement for firefighters?
Mm-hmm.
And what was that?
It varied from place to place, but I think a lot of them were 6 feet.
Really? That's why I always thought firefighters were, like, tall.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought of that because you were jumped up there.
Well, this engine, they decided, and they didn't want it to be as long.
Yeah.
But they wanted to carry as much water as possible, so that made it higher. And it, what that does is it makes the doors that open upward difficult for me to reach. So I always make sure that I have someone tall on my crew, so I don't have to jump like I'm doing.
Makes sense, right?
Frank has privileges.
That's
right. You can say, hey, who did you shut that door for me?
Yeah.
So in here, this is called the engineer's compartment, and it has all the stuff that the engineer, who's the driver, might need, tools and a pump card for doing the water pressures,
uh-huh.
Some additives to add to the water to make it more absorbent,
uh-huh.
Flares and cones and our chains.
So this is a thing that tells you pumping apparatus operator job aid.
Yeah.
So what is this now? How does this work? I see it's a chart.
It's a chart.
So this is means...
This is gallons per minute. So let's say I want to flow 150 gallons per minute out of an 1¾-inch hose. I go and I bring those lines together. That tells me I have 35 pounds of friction loss in that line when I flow that. When you water through a hose...
How would you use the 150? Like, what would that be used to take care of?
That's a house fire.
That's a, and what's the 2,000?
That is for the big master stream on top.
Yeah. And what would that be used for?
That's for a big commercial fire or something you don't want to get close to.
Oh, so that's the thing that just shoots...
Yep, that's the turret.
...into it. Okay.
So, that tells me that for every 100 feet mm-hmm. of hose I have off, I'm going to lose 35 PSI or pounds of pressure in that line. Because as you push water through a hose,
so
there's friction.
Yeah.
And that makes it loses water pressure.
Yeah.
So you have to add that number back in.
Ah, okay.
So that's the engineer's job, is to determine what do I need to set the pump panel at.
Oh.
So that
to add an additional 35, so because we're 200 feet.
Because I want 150 gallons per minute to come out of the nozzle.
Yeah.
But if I say I want 100, if I calculate for 150 PSI coming out of the engine, you'll only get 100 gallons per minute at the nozzle.
Got it.
Because
you're 200 feet away.
Yeah.
So you have to add 70 pounds. That makes sense.
Yeah. That's what this is about.
Okay.
Different diameter hose uh-huh. have different friction loss.
Cool.
And different nozzles have different flow rates.
Cool.
So it's all kinds of lots of math.
Neat.
So this is the pump panel. It looks really scary. Lots of levers.
It does.
Lots
the luge discharge.
Yes, that's the big turret
on
top.
All color-coded.
It's color-coded.
It's like a rainbow.
So this is where the engineer will stand to get water in and water out.
So the water goes in here, fills up in the truck somewhere, and then comes out?
It does. Inside here is a pump, and there's also a water tank. We carry 700 gallons of water.
So there's 700 gallons of water in here.
Yep. And
that's
to
get you started.
Yes. And that can go pretty quick.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So this is the main inlet for a hydrant. So water comes in, it goes into the pump.
From the hydrant.
From the hydrant.
Cool.
So then the engineer is here. They can see how much water is coming in, how much water they have available to go out, and determine where it's going out, what line it's coming
out. Who takes
out of.
Care of this?
The engineer, the driver.
The driver. So
mm-hmm.
he gets out and comes here. Because
yep.
it's right side, the perfect side, right?
Yep. That's his job or her job.
Okay. The firefighter.
The engineer.
The engineer. This is the paramedic unit.
This is your seat.
That's right, the podcaster. Right, and there's a place for the recording equipment right there. My God, I never noticed that. Like in all the fire trucks I've been in, I never noticed that.
And this is the driver's seat.
Nice.
You can sit in there.
That's okay.
We run the siren and the horn. There's foot pedals for that.
So that's the brake and the gas.
Yep, just like a car. Has the seatbelt.
Keep the seatbelt. Put the seatbelt on.
Yeah.
Are we there yet? Okay, what's the battery switch for?
There's two batteries on this rig. Two banks of batteries, actually. So it's just turning on or off the battery.
Okay.
Start the rig.
Okay. And, okay.
It's a diesel, so you have to have the battery on.
Okay. See, I don't know about diesel. Yeah. I don't know anything about cars, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know one from the other.
Yeah, so it's got all the equipment. It's got the panels to turn on the overhead lights.
Neat.
Lots of little things to do. The different,
yeah.
Put the pump in here.
All the buttons.
Yeah, lots of things.
Neat. So how long did it take you to learn how to drive this?
When I got here, it was a couple years before I went through what we call apparatus operator school to learn how to drive and pump. And then at that time it was a 2-week class. Now it's a month-long class, so learning how to drive and pump the apparatus. So it took a couple years, and then I started to teach the apparatus operator program myself. So, which is funny, you learn a lot more. You know, they always say, if you want to learn something, teach it.
Mm-hmm,
So I did that. I was an engineer for seven years before I promoted to lieutenant. And now I don't drive anymore. Not much. You know, I pulled it out of the station.
But I mean, you have to be able to drive it. Yeah.
I have to be able to drive.
Neat.
So
this is rural. Is that Christmas trees
over
there?
Those are Christmas trees. That's all nursery stock. We have berry fields. We grow strawberries.
Yeah, I know that. I've seen the berry fields.
Yeah. Yeah, this is very rural out here. We're a very diverse community. We have the rural suburban residential, and then we have the suburban core with very along our mass transit line, which has got very low social economic factors and high call volume.
Yeah.
A lot of unemployment. We have
in Gresham.
Lots of migrant workers, and so we have a huge Hispanic population. And then we've got lots of industry. We've got a major railway on the Columbia Gorge.
Mm-hmm.
We respond to the Columbia River.
Okay.
We respond to the Sandy River. We have the interstate freeway going through.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Another question. Suppose there are oil or some gas that leaks into the Columbia River, right,
mm-hmm.
and it gets set on fire, and you have fire on the water. How do you deal with that?
Well, it's going to burn that fuel off. That's pretty much.
Yeah.
You can't put water on it to
burn
it out.
Right.
It'll burn it off. You just want to make sure that it's...
Well,
you use booms.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Portland Fire and the airport have fire boats with booms, and the Coast Guard has booms to contain it. You could also spray water to move it away from houseboats.
Like bridges or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought
that would be like something. You'd be like, oh my God, we have to do this. Well, Ken, it is on water, and it will burn off. Duh. That's why I'm not a firefighter.
The bigger issue is the contamination.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a longer-term deal that the Coast Guard would take care of. We would do the initial response to make sure the immediate danger and threat is taken care of, and then they would take care of the longer-term issues with that.
Interesting. Yeah. Who does your lawn?
We do.
You do it? Nice job.
Didn't they do a nice job?
Yeah. This looks like a desert plant here.
It is a plant that Chris Lip, who is inside the station, he bought that on the reduced rack at Thriftway Grocery Store 15 years ago. It was dying, and he planted it there.
Oh, my stars!
And it gets huge like that, and we cut it down to the ground, and then after a couple of years, it's huge like that again. I don't know. Some kind of pineapple plant.
I like it. Does it grow fruit?
No. It's just
Does look like a pineapple.
He paid 25 cents for it.
No. That's amazing.
For the listeners, this plant is 10 feet tall.
I'll take a picture of it. This one I'll have to get a picture of.
It looks like Sigmund the Sea Monster.
My partner, he found this little tiny thumb of a cactus thrown in the sidewalk. Like, you know, where he's in the middle of the city, right? Somebody had threw it away. You know, dead for all intents and purposes. They're trying to help. Firefighter Cindy is helping a pedestrian who's lost in Gresham. I'm going to look at the rest of the the yard here. It says Fire District Number 10. Look at this. It's like nicely manicured, nice lawn. I'm jealous. I'm jealous of the lawn here. Oh, and there's a ditch down here. The road, you can see. I'm right here. I'm just looking at the flora and fauna. And I'm just amazed at this plant.
Awesome.
I'm going to go get the camera. You want to talk to the folks? Just hold it like Darren. I'll be right back.
Don't know what to say without you here.
Oh, yeah, you figure out something.
Well, we've been having a great time with Ken. I'll talk about you. How's that? And today is the day we should have gone to Mount St. Helens because it's beautiful weather. In fact, at the fire station, I can see Mount Hood. When we went to Mount St. Helens, it was completely whited out. Today would have been the good day. So Ken is getting a picture of the big plant. And then we'll continue the interview.
Here, take a picture of me next
to this.
Okay.
Scale. Okay,
now
you have to talk.
I got the camera here. I'm going to stand next to the plant. It looks like a giant monster, doesn't it? Like something out of Star Trek.
Oh, that was good, actually.
You like that?
I got you. Oh, now I can't find it.
I found it. Oh, yeah, good. That's perfect. I love it. I love it. We should... Where's the one? Oh, the color. Okay, go get that. I'll take a picture here. They have to answer the phone. I'm like, no, you're not going to answer that phone. You're going to let me take pictures here and embed in District 10. It's so much nicer today than yesterday. Yesterday was cloudy. Let's get the color. Let's get the front. It's so nice out.
It's beautiful.
Get a picture of the...
Yeah, if you get actually into the road, you can probably see Mount Hood.
Really? Let's see Mount Hood. I was there last year. Looks like somebody dropped something in the road here. Something. What's that thing down there? Just a hill. Okay, see, in the east, that would be, you know, Mount Everest. Neat here. Okay, I want to stop the podcast. We're going to talk later.
Thank you.
Cindy. What was the question?
My schedule.
Oh, your schedule. What's your schedule?
Well, I work 24 hours on, and then I have 48 hours off.
My God, that's a long time to draw. Now, how much of that time can you sleep?
Well, it depends. I usually try to get to bed early at, say, 9 o'clock, because we can get called out any time during the night, mm-hmm. as many times during the night. You could sleep all night, or you might not get any sleep.
Correct.
Get up a couple times. And I don't sleep as well here, because you always know that you could get up, so you don't sleep as soundly.
Yeah.
And it's not your bed.
You're right. It's two other people's beds, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Do the lieutenants sleep in it, or other firefighters?
Well, it's actually, you have officer's dorm, firefighter dorm.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's the other two officers. But mm-hmm. we have our own sheets, and actually, I use a sleeping bag, mm-hmm. and my own pillow. We used to share pillows.
Ooh.
I'm figure out why we all got sick and big bunches.
Right. Why are we all sick? Because you're the Borg.
Yeah, you're the Borg.
I am 7 of 1, or whatever.
Seven
you're
of
one
nine.
Of nine.
Seven
yeah.
of nine.
Yeah, 7 of 9.
I am 1 of 9. So I start at 7 o'clock in the morning, and then I get off at 7 o'clock in the morning. So mm-hmm. This station does all the scheduling, and this is where people call in sick. So
for all the places?
For all 7 fire stations.
Really? So that's your responsibility?
Yes, yeah, and I, as the captain, am overall in charge of staffing and then make sure that all the shifts and all the firefighters out here are using the program correctly and make changes. So I just got all the transfer list out that's effective July 1, so now I have to go in and adjust all of the schedule and people's assignments so that the rosters are correct starting July 1.
Ah, very good. So, okay, let me ask you, what's your next step up after captain?
It would be battalion chief.
Battalion chief?
And that is what we call the duty chief. They work the same schedule, the 24 on, 48 off.
Mm-hmm.
They drive the fire SUV. I don't know if you've seen
No. The
YouTube video of the fire SUV.
No.
Well, I'll send it to you. You can put it on the link. It's a joke.
Okay.
But they are the one who drives the fire SUV and our overall command at a scene. So, like, if I had a house fire today, I would go and be in the initial incident commander,
mm-hmm.
giving the first orders. And then however long it takes for that battalion chief to arrive, it could take 10, 15 minutes out here. He would come, and I could, I'll give him a briefing of this is what I've got, this is what we have, this is what we're doing, this is who's here, this is what needs to happen. And he may retain me and keep me as an incident commander and be my aide, or he may say, great, I'll take command and you go back with your crew. Because we only have 3 people on a rig, I've got my firefighter working with another crew because nobody works alone,
mm-hmm.
and then my engineer's on the engineer panel, so it might be make more sense that they send me back to my other crew member.
Got it.
So that battalion chief has responsibility for administrative stuff for the shift, such as I have administrative stuff for the station. He has it for the whole shift.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 3 battalion chiefs, 1 for each shift. And then above that is a deputy chief of operations. We're going to get an all call. It's not us going anywhere.
How do you know? Because of the light?
Yep. I'm going to get a radio and we can listen to it.
Okay. A rig that responded to smoke in the structure and found that there was probably a fire. So they've called what we call a box, mm-hmm.
which gets, in this case, 6 engines, 2 trucks, a couple chiefs. It's in Portland, deep into Portland, but whenever there's a fire or a major incident, we get what we call an all call,
mm-hmm.
and we hear it so that we know a whole bunch of rigs are now on a fire. And it could go to a greater alarm. So it kind of gives you a greater sense of awareness of what's going on in the county. And if it's a area close to you, you could be prepared to move out or actually go on a greater alarm.
Makes sense.
So we can listen to this for a while.
Sure.
They're going to update
I copy most of that.
What they found.
The 3B is in the basement. We're in the electrical room.
So they repeat.
There is no fire. Yeah. We've got a, there was a fire on the electrical panel. No fire right now. We are, we need some ventilation down here, and we're checking for extension.
So they need some fans to go through.
Command copies that. I've got truck 3B, or truck 3 heading your way for ventilation.
And this is a condo, you said?
These were condos, yeah.
I wonder if they're new.
I don't know.
Engine 3B from command. From truck 3.
This is public, right? I mean,
yep.
Okay, good.
Cause you can go to
cordlive.com.
Yeah? Yeah, but is a gas fan going to work down there, or do we need to stretch some cords with our electrical fan?
You can go to OregonLive.com, which is the Oregonian's website, and you can listen to a combined police and fire scanner.
Really? I wonder if you can do that with each state. I mean, there must be... Well, at least in Oregon, right? They have that.
Oh, that's, well, it's not for Oregon. It's just for the metro area, for Portland metro area. So it's Portland, Vancouver, Clackamas, Washington County.
Really? So even Washington stuff is on there?
Yeah, because that's the Portland metro area.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Command all companies. What we've got is approximately a 13-story non-combustible brand-new building under construction. Worker...
Wasn't it? Is electricity a major cause of fires?
It is a fire source.
Like, what's the most... What's
smoking.
The thing, smoking causes the most...
Candles and cooking.
Candles. I hate candles. But cooking, I mean, I like cooking, but... I hate candles. Candles scare me.
Yeah.
We used to live in an apartment building, and a lot of students lived there. And this woman, the girl who lived next to us, she used to light candles all over the place and listen, drink. You know, it didn't make me feel very comfortable. You know, she'd listen to Madonna.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah, that was the problem. And drink wine and light her candles. It was like, you know.
Not good.
Not good. Not good.
All right, well.
Just don't like candles.
So that was a little exciting.
That's neat. But you know what? They're so professional. Yeah. Because you have to be.
Yeah,
they were, you know, they didn't scream or they weren't hysterical.
Mm-mm.
No, they shouldn't be.
No.
That's right.
No.
Very, very nice. You see, you should treat all firefighters nice because they're a Borg. And if you're bad to one, you're going to get... Yeah, that's right. Or do something.
All right. Well, I'm going to work on my staff.
Okay, you can do that.
And if something else exciting, we'll jump back in.
Okay, I want to turn this off.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.